Welcome to Paw Print Academy, your blueprint to raising better dogs. My name's Ryan, and I'll be your host for this journey. I've got my trusty co-host here, Brianna.
Hello.
And together, we're bringing you real-world training insights built on leadership, structure, and proven methods. We record this podcast with live clients on the line in one take with live, unscripted questions and answers. At the end of the day, this podcast is a lot more than just teaching your dog to sit or stay. It's about building trust, creating calmness, and becoming the kind of leader your dog truly needs. We do that with our three-pillar method of trust, obey, and perform. Together, we'll show you how these three pillars shape every step of training. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. All right, episode 9, crate training, building security and independence. So when we're talking about crate training, a lot of people tune out. They tune out real quick because they're like, oh, well, I am either not interested in a crate, or my dog's too big for a crate, or my dog's too old for a crate, and just going to call it what it is. None of those things are true.
Yeah.
So welcome to Paw Print Academy. And tonight we're talking about crate training. We're talking about so this kind of builds on last week's episode. Last week's episode was on potty training. And we talked a lot about how we're going to use the crate to help with potty training. Well, that goes so much further than that.
Right.
Because we can use the crate to do all sorts of things. And one of the biggest reasons why we use crates is to deal with just anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of owners see the crate as being the center of their dog's anxiety. That has not been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so tonight we're going to bring you a bunch of examples and some stories and things, and we're going to talk through crate training. As we do this, we talked about it on the intro, but we've got live clients on the line, and I've got the questions open here. Just a second. Yep. So I've got the questions open. So as you guys think of questions, please jot them down, send them over so I can monitor that as we're going through this, and we'll try to answer them as we go. That seems to help some of this. And then at the end, we'll open it up to a live Q&A for all of your questions and concerns and things related to what we're talking about. And even if you've got a random other question, we can deal with it. All right. So as we get into here, core idea, the crate is not punishment.
Right.
I cannot say that loud enough.
Yeah.
I cannot make this a big enough exclamation point.
Yeah.
So the crate cannot be punishment. And when I say it cannot be, I mean like when you're trying to train your dog and people are calling me asking about, hey, how do I do this? You cannot afford to let the crate become a punishment. And right off the bat, I haven't even gotten through the entire core idea, but that's like just the first sentence right that I wrote down, right? And it's like, we gotta talk about that. No matter what you do, and no matter what you hear me talk about tonight, if you don't learn anything else, circle back to that one.
Yeah.
The crate cannot be a punishment. Mm-hmm. You cannot use the crate to punish your dog. Because if you do that, none of this other stuff that we're going to talk about is going to work.
Yeah.
All right. So back to the core idea for the entire podcast episode. The crate is not punishment. It is a tool that creates safety, structure, and independence. When introduced properly, it becomes one of the most valuable foundations in our training regimen. All right. So that's a little bit to unpack. So let's kind of just break it down. So number one, dogs are den animals by nature. They, you know, grew up that way, evolved that way, if that's what you believe, whatever you want to call it. Dogs have been den creatures in the past, and the crate provides a safe space for them to thrive, for them to decompress, for them to feel protected, for them to feel confident.
Yep.
All of these things are attributes that we want our dogs to feel. So, let's see here. I'm going to refer back to my notes. First thing that kind of supports that point. So the crate creates a calm environment away from overstimulation. So let's talk about that for a second, because all of this is going to circle back to that one major point, right? The crate's not punishment, and it's a tool that creates safety, structure, and independence. So when we are talking about that, what we're talking about is creating a space where your dog can just go and they can see what's going on. They can kind of feel like they're part of it. They're informed. They're experiencing the things that the family is experiencing, but they're not necessarily in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Because when they're in the middle of it, that's where you get overstimulation. And we say this part all the time, but an excited dog is not the same thing as a happy dog.
Yep.
A happy dog is not the same thing as an overstimulated dog.
Mm-hmm.
An excitement and overstimulation has a razor thin line between it.
Yeah.
And you can get right up to the edge of excited and everything can be totally fine. And as soon as just the one little paw pad goes past that line and you're on the overstimulation side, your dog's going to behave differently. And they're going to make different choices in that state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use a crate to control some of that overstimulation.
Right. And I think when people mistakenly see it as is like, oh, it's a cage that I'm putting my dog in. Right. Because there's like,
oh, yeah, for
horror
sure.
Stories of like, you know, crazy things where people leave their dogs in crates for like days. Right. That's not what we're talking about.
Not what we're talking about at all.
I want people to reframe their mindset when they look at a crate and think of it as like a bedroom. Right. Because where do you go when you're exhausted and you're like tapped out for the day and you just want to relax and it's your personal like space that you get to go into and you're like, yep. And now it's time to relax. That's why people sometimes don't put TVs in their bedroom. Right. Because it's a space meant for sleeping and for relaxing. And that's what the crate needs to kind of be looked at as.
Right, because it offers a predictable place that reduces anxiety when the dog is alone. Now, when you never leave your dog alone, like remember, no matter what, remember this. Your dog only knows what you taught them. Mm-hmm. If you got your dog, which a lot of people do, and so this isn't 100% across the board, but most owners that we deal with get their dogs when they're very, very young. Usually that 8-week time frame is like when it is about the earliest that you can take them home from a breeder and get them their first shots and all of these things.
Yeah.
So 8, 9, 10 weeks old, your dog barely knows how to walk. It learns everything that it knows from you. Because unless you've got another dog in the house that it's learning from, or unless you brought its mother dog with it, like it's not learning from those things. It's learning from you and it's patterning from you. So if we never take the time to teach our dogs to calm down, and we never teach our dogs that it's okay to be away from us, when are they going to learn it?
Right.
So a lot of times, and we saw this across the entire country during the COVID times, where there was this huge, a second pandemic, right? Not the COVID one, but the other one on the dog space. Excuse me. On the dog space, it was about these anxious and anxiety riddled dogs that, like,
they're so anxious,
super separation anxiety, because everyone was home
all the time.
And your dog was never away from you,
right? And even if you didn't have a dog when COVID hit, you got a dog because you were home by yourself.
Huge influx of dogs.
Yeah, huge influx.
And that was something we saw across the entire country on the demographic. So, this concept of you need to leave your dog alone sometimes rubs people the wrong way. And they're like, well, what do you mean I need to leave it alone? Like, I got the dog to be a companion for me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I totally understand. But is there ever a time where you're going to go somewhere where you can't take the dog?
Right.
Right. We're talking about regular dogs, usually not service dogs. You go to a movie at a movie theater, the dog, where's the dog even going to go? Like, you can't take a dog everywhere.
Yeah.
So there are places where you are not going to take your dog. And when you do leave, inevitably, then what? Right. And it's like, and not only that, but like, let's make a different argument. Do you think that your dog is ever going to get sick or hurt in their entire life?
Mm-hmm.
At some point, it's highly likely they're probably going to have to go to a vet. And if they ever have a surgical procedure, or they have a, they hurt themselves somehow or whatever, it's highly likely that a vet is going to need to put them in a crate or a kennel, even just temporarily.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a high, high likelihood that at some point you're going to need to control the space that a dog is allowed to be in. And when that happens, you've not really prepared your dog if you're not working on this concept of crate training.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the dog trainer side. Now, let's make this a little less bleak, because we're both completely supportive of you taking your dogs everywhere.
Yeah.
Where they can go.
Right. Right?
So there's no problem with that. There's no issue with that. But I think that we're going to present a couple of other concepts in here that I think will apply to more than just crate training. Because if you think about the crate as just the crate, I think you may miss out on the second level to this, which is, let me see how I can say this. It is selective confinement. Confinement, and really forced confinement between a human and the dog, can be an immense builder of, one, your relationship, and two, the most highly sought after factor in dog training, and that is anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
When we train a dog, the dogs that learn fastest are the dogs where we can help to increase their anticipation. Because when you increase anticipation, suddenly you've got a dog that is dialed in and ready. They are excited to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a tool that is a huge, huge step up that you can use to train your dog to do anything.
Yeah.
So, and we're going to bring up a whole bunch of other reasons here as we go. But right off the bat, confinement is not a punishment. Confinement is a tool. And it's a tool that builds your relationship. It does not break it down.
Yeah.
By you controlling the space of the house and teaching a dog that sometimes that is their, like, place of existence, is like, well, it's time for you to go into your crate. that is not a, like, it's not a zero-sum game where, like, you're the winner and they're the loser. You both can win here.
Right.
So.
I have, like, so many things to
say. I know. I'm really trying to stay in order.
I'm trying not to say anything.
There's really, like, 100 good reasons why you should invest a time to teach your dog to take its own time in a crate or a kennel.
Just take a nap.
All right. So the next one that I've got written down, though, is that it helps puppies and adult dogs self-soothe. Mm-hmm. So if your dog looks to you for every bit of confidence in its life, the moment that you are away from it, it will be a nervous wreck. It will be an anxious mess. And we see that usually that's when we get the call and we're like, well, usually a client calls me on the phone and they're like, hey, I've got a dog that is destroying my house when I'm gone. Mm-hmm. Or I've got a dog that is barking incessantly every time I leave. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I come back, they're fine.
Yeah.
Both of those issues circle back to the fact that that is not a confident dog.
Yeah.
And they're anxious and they're anxiety ridden and they're trying to find their own confidence. One, things in a dog's mouth typically increases their, like, self-soothing, right? Mm-hmm. They, by them having their mouth around something, they feel more in control and stronger in that moment.
Right.
So it's that's like usually how we...
What is it for babies when they, what is the, oh my gosh, it's been so long.
Not, I'm a dog expert, not a baby expert. I don't know.
Right. But that is exactly, I always relate it back to like kids and babies, I feel like, because it's something a lot of people can relate back to at some point somebody's interacted with.
Right. I just can't help you with this one. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Self-soothing.
So I'll keep going. If you think of it, you jump in.
Yeah.
So on the dogs, right, the chewing, when a dog has something in their mouth, a lot of times they feel a little more in control of that situation. And so that's where that soothing comes from. So oftentimes when you have a dog that chews things when you leave or something, when you're not there to watch them, it's not that they're trying to be ornery. It's just that they found soothing in the concept of having something in their mouth. And then it kind of gets out of control, and then they're like, oh, wow, I ate the entire pillow, and the pieces are all over the place. And then you see the video pop up on Facebook later. The other side of it is the anxious dog that is now, as soon as their owners leave, has never had an issue with, like, barking at the windows and scratching at the doors and trying to get out, but suddenly a dog walks by and the dog goes crazy because they're behind a barrier and they are longing for that, like, that confidence complex, right? So, and they can get that by reacting to the external triggers, which is the dog walking by. They get a huge internal flush of dopamine and other neurotransmitters, and they increase their self-gratifying behavior by continuing down that process and ramping up. And all of that stems from the concept that the dog wasn't really confident enough to just let a dog encroach on their area or let another person, a UPS guy or a mailman or something like that, come up to the house. So those things can pop up and they kind of shed light on your dog's, I guess, thought process.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were looking at me like I was missing a major point here.
Nope.
All right, so how, we kind of alluded to it, but how would you explain to a client that crates are comforting and they're not cruel?
I think my original analogy of like comparing it to a bedroom and not a cage, right? It's something natural for a dog to go in and relax And yeah, it is forced relaxation, but also it comes back down to when you think of like a baby and you have them out and exposed in a stimulating environment, they're not going to usually fall asleep. Mm-hmm. They start crying, they start whining, they start doing things to express that they're tired, but they can't take a nap. They can't turn off. They can't get away from everything that's going on. It's like a whole fear of missing out thing. It's the same way with a dog. So if you take the baby, put them in a crib, they're like, okay, well, I'm just going to go to sleep now. There's nothing going on. Same thing with a dog. You take them out of that environment. You go, hey, we're going to go in here. We're going to take a nap in your room.
Yeah. Cool.
Got it. That's the only thing that there is to do. And that doesn't mean, excuse me, that doesn't mean that if you go to leave, you can't give your dog like a bone or something to chew on or something to enjoy for a little bit. But it is time for them to relax when you're home and you give them kennel time.
Yeah. So I like to explain it or explain a concept that there's very, very few dogs that are mentally prepared to make as many decisions as we typically put on them or in front of them. And so on a daily basis. So the very, very confident dogs that are or would be the natural like alpha leader of the pack, those are dogs that might be a little more prepared to make some decisions in the household. But most dogs, they're not prepared to do that, and they just want to follow. Mm-hmm. Most dogs are really, really happy just following a confident leader. They don't want to be that. The concept of every dog should get to choose what toys they play with or choose what they get to do today or choose what they're going to eat today. Those are thoughts and processes and emotions that we value as humans, and we put them on the dog, and it's not actually accurate because the dog doesn't want to choose all of those things. Mm-hmm. And when they have to, it oftentimes results in some anxiety. Mm-hmm. So the way that we can avoid that is by making decisions that are educated because we know our dogs, but making decisions for them and guiding them, leading them, showing them what is expected. And when the dog then follows, their anxiety goes down because you're leading from the front and you're explaining and showing and giving clear expectations. And then the dog's able to follow that and go, I'm doing the right thing. And that almost is, I'm not going to say it's the only thing, but it is a huge, huge percentage, a huge piece of the pie, that when a dog can confidently operate within your expectations and they know that they're doing the right thing, you see a ton of anxiety go away mm-hmm. in dogs. So if that is true, which all of those things that I just explained, then controlling what the dog gets into and controlling and keeping the dog from making more of those decisions that are made without your supervision mm-hmm. is really, really important. We want to limit as much of those issues as possible. And so anytime that we can't supervise the dog, I'm going to highly recommend that the dog goes in their crate. It's not a punishment. It's an opportunity. Think of it as a proactive opportunity for you to not clash with your dog. Mm-hmm. If they go and make a silly mistake because they weren't mentally prepared to make the right decision, or they didn't have the like faculty to think about this and pick the right thing, now you're in a position where now you have to correct them and you'd be like, I can't believe you just ate that, or I can't believe you just pooped on the floor, or whatever it was. But if we would have just controlled that, if you just would have stepped up as the leader of that pack and been like, I can't predict. I can't predict with a high degree of certainty that you're going to make a good choice. So I'm going to place you in your kennel or your crate, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to let you out, and we're going to be best friends without all of that, like, clash. Mm-hmm. I hope that that makes sense. That's how I typically, the outline of how I try to explain it.
Yeah.
It just helps you to avoid so much, like, I'm really struggling for the right word. There's usually a word I like to use, and it's just the concept of just clashing with your dog. And you're staring at me. You're not helping me.
I can't think of the word that's in your brain either.
No.
I don't know. It's not that's coming right. to me.
Well, neither one of us is bat a thousand on guessing what the other one was trying to say. So share a story of a dog whose anxiety improved through crate training.
Definitely Gabe.
Gabe. So yeah. Her dog, Mr. Gabe, mm-hmm. was the world's highest level anxiety dog. Right. The worst one that I've ever right. gotten to
Still
work with.
Still wins that award someday.
Still wins, yeah. He's crazy.
Yeah, but yeah, never really went in a kennel after he was rescued out of the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just like stayed in a room or like slept in his little like dog bed yep. all day, but mostly in like the spare bedroom.
Like could not like walk through doorways, could yeah. not go outside, would shake like a leaf.
Yeah.
If, you know, anything, if you walk towards him, he yeah. would just pee on the floor.
Right. I forget some of these things.
Right. It's been a little while.
I know. Right. And when I first got him, actually, he was a couch dog.
Mm-hmm.
I brought him home and he immediately jumped on the couch and I was like, oh, well. I don't know what to do with that. I've never had a couch dog before. Usually they just like, I've always taught dogs, like you don't get on the couch. And
right.
most of the time it's not a problem. My last dog before Gabe used to never get on the couch unless I left. And then I'd come home and his two back legs were still on the couch as he was stretching off of it. And I was like, okay, cool. But he always respected the fact that he wouldn't get on it if I was home.
Right.
So Gabe definitely was like, I'm going to sleep on this couch. I got a new couch, moved it to a different wall. He never touched the couch again.
He was like, this is the worst couch.
Yeah, the worst couch. He hated it. It was so different. He was like, I'm never going to touch it. And then we introduced crate, and he took a long time to adapt to it. I remember I put a bowl of food in there for like 2 days, and he was like, I'm not going to touch that. I don't need it. And I was like, he's going to get hungry. He's got to get it. And sure enough, he did. But he could stretch so far. He's like a spaghetti noodle. He could stretch so far that he didn't even have to get all the way in the crate to get the food. So he got it. But I think the day that he like realized that you could close the door and nothing could touch him, it was like 100%. He was like, this is my house. I live here now. Put me in any kind of box with a door, and I love right. it.
And fast forward now.
Right. Never wants to
leave. It's not just the crate, right?
Yeah.
He goes in any. So yeah. we've got metal crates. We've got big 4x4, like 4-foot by 4-foot wire, like kennel setups.
Yeah, kennel.
We've got travel kennels. We have big ones, small ones. He goes in all of them. He jumps to second and third story stacked crates.
Yeah,
he does right. He loves those. And he goes in them even like if he hears a noise or there's something that he is worried about or something he's scared
right,
of.
He's like, which door
is open? Instead
of
him, right. He will look for one of the kennels to just go into.
Yeah.
And he'll just lay down and chill.
Yep.
He's like, yep, I'm good in here.
I'm good.
Because it's never, ever been a punishment.
Yeah.
It's always been safe. Mm-hmm. It's always been, hey, nothing has ever gotten me in here. Mm-hmm. And so it's become something that he relies on to deal with his own anxiety.
Yeah.
Common misconceptions owners have about crate use. The punishment thing. That's the biggest thing for me. The punishment or the concept that, oh, well, but the dog's going to be sad because, like, I wouldn't want to be stuck in the crate. So I don't want to make my dog go in there.
Right. And so it's also like the fact that when the dog gets in there, like they're going to whine, right? But that doesn't last forever. And if you let it out because it whined, he or she, I say it,
yeah,
because I don't know. But if you do it because they whine,
right,
they will whine every time because you're going to let them out.
Because you taught that to them.
Right. And so it's an entire process, kennel training, right? And yeah, you might have to put on some noise canceling headphones.
Right.
I mean, we've got...
There's no shortcut to this either.
Right. There's really not.
We do this over and over and over.
Has screamed for like 3-4 days in a row going in and out of the kennel. And it's like, I don't want to be in here. I don't want to be in here. Cool.
Yeah.
But you have to, right? Yeah. There's always like a moment where an owner needs a kennel, whether they will admit that they need the kennel or not, but they will need a kennel and their dog will not be used to that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's see here. Right. My brain has been going down different rabbit holes here. Crates as management and leadership tools. So the crate really sets a boundary and it prevents bad habits from developing. So this is what we were kind of talking about on the last episode of like the triangle, and it, by crate training, you prevent the bad habit of dog peeing on the floor or dog pooping around the house by confining the dog and then creating this environment where the dog doesn't want to soil their own space. They will be less likely to not go outside, to go to the bathroom somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. Including in their crate, as long as we don't make it too big. But those specifics we already covered last week, so I'm going to try to stay on track. I talked about how by confining your dog and using a crate, a lot of times you can just avoid those crazy moments where you're like, oh my gosh, why did you do this? Whatever that is, whatever that looks like, I've heard a lot of them. When that happens, inevitably, my question to owners is, why were they out? Mm-hmm. Why were they left out? And almost always, it's rarely, well, because I was going to be gone for 12 hours in a row. Mm-hmm. That's almost never what I hear. Usually it's like, well, they've never done it before. Mm-hmm. Or, well, I just feel bad putting them in there. Or, well, I guess I didn't think that this would happen. All of those things kind of revolve around the same concept, which is we're really thinking about the crate like you would think about the crate, but you're not a dog.
Yeah.
And so we've really got to focus on like what we're dealing with. We're not talking about a hairy human on four legs. We're mm-hmm. talking about a dog. And dogs, if taught that there's no negative connotation to this space, dogs will really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And they can really enjoy that. And we can cultivate that. And we can use that to even bolster our relationship with the dog. So don't feel like, you should never feel like you're a bad dog owner because you crate your dog.
Right.
That's just not how the dog thinks about it.
All
right. So it stops destructive behaviors when dogs can't be supervised. We really nailed that one down. The next thing is that it teaches impulse control by structuring when they have freedom and when they don't. Instead of them, you think about this a little differently. Instead of being like, cool, you have ultimate freedom in the house, and then when you go in your crate, that's when you're in jail and you have no freedom. Mm-hmm. Well, that is the negative connotation that we're talking about and encouraging you to not instill in your dog. If you thought about it differently, like the crate is your normal, the crate is your mm-hmm. baseline.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you get to come out and interact with everything and you get these freedoms. Mm-hmm. It might lead you to a different thought process. Now, this once again, I'm not saying that the dog has to live in the crate, but if you instill it in short bursts, it can do a lot to increasing the value of the freedom in the house mm-hmm. so that you can even use just the regular freedom of it, of the dog being able to meander around the house as a rewarding activity.
Yep.
All right. And the last thing with this is that it reinforces the owner's role as leader by controlling access to space. Almost all the time when we're dealing with a dog with resource guarding or dealing with a dog that sees their place in the pack as being above the owner, that dog does not often spend time in a crate or has had a like definitive issue with going in a crate in the past.
Yeah.
Almost all the time. So this is why we're harping on this, and it may sound like we're just beating the horse, right? The dead horse.
Yeah, that's the phrase.
Right. I said it wrong. I'm sorry. How do you incorporate crate time into structured mm-hmm. daily routine? So how do we do it at Top Dog Training?
So we do it kind of like, I don't know, I relate it, always go back to kids and babies, right? It's like always.
Got a lot of those examples.
I know, because it just makes a little bit more sense when you think of it this way and can relate it back to like humans. Even though we always encourage you, like, don't put your emotions on your dog, like, you can still find those correlations for sure. So we do nighttime, always in a crate, right? Travel kennel, or the big 4x4 kennel, depending on the dog. But always sleeping in a crate. We don't let the dogs like free sleep anywhere. We don't do like in the bed, in the bedroom, any of that. Always in a crate. And then we do morning let outs. We do back in the crate really quickly for breakfast routines. And then we're out and kind of working. We do middle of the day nap times, just like babies. And then we do like a little afternoon session in there before dinner and with dinner. And then it's back out again and then back in at nighttime for sleeping.
Right. So the concept is in and out.
In and out. Yeah.
And it happens throughout the day to create those breaks.
Yeah.
Right. It's not about, well, I'm just going to put them in there so that then I can, you know, go to the store. It's like, I'm sitting right there, but this is a structured rest.
Right.
That is a concept that I think a lot of people just don't get. It's not about, well, I mean, I got asked one time, an owner was pretty frustrated with dogs that were just peeing and pooping in the house all the time. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, at what point in this training do I finally get to just like let my dogs out around the house so that they can just, you know, be dogs? I'm like, well, that depends on the dogs that you have.
Right.
You might not have the dogs that get to do that.
Yeah.
Because every dog is different. There's some dogs that they never have to be in a crate one time.
Right. Yeah.
But we're a dog trainer company and we're putting this podcast out for people that if you've got an amazingly trained dog, you're probably not listening to this podcast.
Right, yeah. If your dog's never needed
right?
to be in
if
a crate,
if your dog has never needed to be in a crate, you're probably not the demographic that's listening to this.
Right.
Or you've certainly not like solicited professional dog training.
Yeah.
Because there are dogs out there that just, maybe they just don't need that.
Right. There's,
that's, I think, fine.
We get asked that a lot with like reactive dogs, and it's like, well, when can I let my dog play with other dogs off leash? I mean, probably never, depending on the dog.
It just depends.
But it depends on the dog. But
you have a reactive dog.
Right, like, and they're like, well, I see other people.
Right, but is that dog reactive?
Yeah, has that dog needed any kind of training?
Right.
Is that dog genetically sound?
We don't get...
There's so many questions.
Right, and we don't get to... This isn't just kicking the can down the road and being like, well, you either get the dog or you know, whatever. No, we can definitely make positive changes, but... When your dog, what we're trying to address is the answer to the question of, well, when does the dog finally get to do this? That's kind of up to the dog.
Right. But it doesn't, crate right? training, like, doesn't even come down to that. It's like we.
Right. I'm going down the reactivity road now in my head, and I'm like answering.
Right. And we talk about crate training in the instance that you need to travel with your dog, right? Mm-hmm. Almost all the time, if you put your dog just like randomly in a car, they're all over the car, mm-hmm. right? It's also not the safest. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have your dog in a kennel and it could be laying down and it could be comfortable and a lot safer. Mm-hmm. Traveling on an airplane, going to the vet's office, like you said, boarding them somewhere. If you think they're not going to be like in some sort of kennel on their own in a different environment, you're wrong. You're throwing them right into the deep end of the pool without giving them any kind of like lesson on how to swim.
Which could potentially be an incredibly life-altering and traumatic event.
Right.
When the dog is hurt and already having a terrible day,
yeah,
going to the vet is not the time to try to talk it calm and put it into a crate.
It's exactly how we talk about like muzzling dogs. It's like you don't throw a muzzle on a dog when you're in a 911 situation and it's like red light.
That's the first time. Right. Yeah. It's not the first time. So, right. I think what you were saying, that's not the time to try to
teach. Right. That's not the time to like, try to just like put it on and be like, hey, let's do this.
Right. We muzzle train our dogs and we crate train our dogs. Mm-hmm. For that specific event.
Yep.
Because at some point, something bad could happen.
Right.
And that's the time when you want to be able to just slide a muzzle on so that a doctor, a vet, or somebody can manipulate a broken limb or something like that without getting bit and without creating a whole bunch of other issues. So, that is a segue. Try not to go down the road too far. But on the reactivity part, what I was trying to say here without going all the way down the road is that the dog is going to control when you get to not lead them anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. Because the dog, and I say that really even carefully, because there's really never a time when you're not going to lead them. But concept of like having to intrusively lead every interaction that the dog has during the day should eventually subside. Mm-hmm. And when that is going to happen, I cannot answer for you. Right. It is not a certain point in training where suddenly you're able to do that.
Right.
It comes down to the dog, and it comes down to, do you trust the dog? Do you trust the dog to make those decisions that you would make yourself, make appropriate decisions, like don't chew up the door, don't chew up the trim on the wall. Mm-hmm. All right. Positive association and consistency is the key to all of this, right? So introducing the crate in the right way is incredibly important. So we're going to talk about that. So number one, never force a dog inside. Use food, use their toys, build value. So one of the ways that we do that, right? So we food lure. I like to get a dog right off the bat. And I just got another dog that started a program just a couple days ago. And the first day we start crate training, and it's cool. Let me take a little bit of food and let me just hold the food like into the crate until I can get the dog to just move their head in. right? Just enough to sniff. And then I'm not going to make them go into it. I'm going to feed them. I'm going to pull my hand back towards them and reward. And I'm going to mark that the same way that we've talked about a whole bunch in the past. I'm going to mark it and reward. And then I'm going to do it again. And I'm going to do it again. And then I'm going to hold the food just a little bit further. And I'm going to get that one paw in. And as soon as that one paw goes in, and they're like, oh, wow, I got another treat. And they start to see, oh, wow, the crate didn't suck me in. And it didn't, the door didn't just slam on there. Or nothing pulled mm-hmm. me into the crate, right? And then we slowly increase that. When we get two paws, when we get three paws, we get four paws. And we keep, maybe we take the whole door off of the kennel, mm-hmm. if you've got a kennel that can do that. Or the kennel just stays open. Make sure that the door doesn't like swing closed and tap the dog as you're doing a lot of this, because that will weird them out. So it's a slow building block process, but there's no shortcut to this. Once we can get the dog reliably in and out of the crate, then I start rewarding the dog while they're in the crate more than once.
Mm-hmm.
Then two times, then three times, then four times, then five times. I start to build this duration while the dog's just having a great time. It's like, oh, wow, I get so much attention, so much good stuff inside here. It makes them naturally relate more pleasurable things to being in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we let them out. At some point, we eventually... increase the amount of time that we're able to do that. And then we increase that duration, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
Right. And I think one good thing to, like, a good tip is also, like, put a bowl of food in there, like, first thing in the morning and close the kennel door and just leave it there, right? You can leave it there all day with the kennel door closed, and the dog is going to constantly, if you have the kennel in the environment where they are, like in the living room, the dog is constantly going to be like, man, I wish I could have that food. Man, I wish I could have that food. And then by the end of the day, just open the door and let the dog kind of casually go in and eat the food. It doesn't have to be this big entire thing. Like, you can build that anticipation to go into the crate. And I think that works wonders for some dogs, and different dogs are going to react differently, right? They're not all going to be like, yeah, I'll go in there for food,
right?
First time off the bat. Sometimes you're going to have to build it up, and it's going to take a lot longer time.
Yep.
But it really is super dog dependent. And I think that's the thing that some people lose track of is, sometimes we'll get a dog that's like never been in a crate, right? And most of the time when we start with a dog that's never been in one or never really like stayed in one, we will start them in a kennel in the living room, right? Because one, they can see us. They're like, oh, they're still right there. And then maybe if the dog is having a really hard time, you can move it into the bedroom. Because then it feels closer to you at nighttime, because nighttime is when a lot of people struggle and they're like, well, my dog is screaming, right? But when you have a baby, it's screaming also. Like, you have to think of it that way. Like, the dog needs support through that, especially if it's like an 8-week-old puppy, right? It's like away from its siblings, its mom. Like, those are really big emotions that the dog is going through that it can't like show you. But it's a big thing for a puppy. And so even if it's not a puppy, the dog is experiencing something new, being away from people. And that may be hard. So start closer to you and build it out from there. And I will say, some dogs do better if they can't even see you. You know, when we first brought Dexter home, like, it was, okay, does he do better in the bedroom where he can see us? Okay, that worked great for the first couple nights. Now let's try moving him away from us. Does he do better? Does he do worse? Is it manageable to where we can build out the fact that he's moving greater distances away from us? Because ideally, you know, you don't want to hear a dog, like, he slams around in his kennel and kicks his legs everywhere like a gorilla. And so it's like, you don't want to listen to that at night. So obviously the bedroom is not ideal. Mm-hmm. And so you have to figure out what works best for you and the dog and change it up. Don't be afraid to change it up, but also don't change it up too frequently, right? It's like you have to give the dog time to adjust. And yeah, it might whine and cry, but that's a natural thing for a dog to do. And you have to let them like get and gain that independence. And sometimes it takes some big emotions to like do that. But I promise you, like, there's dogs we have that have never touched a crate or been made to stay in a crate when somebody is around. And those are the hardest ones because they're like, no, no, I just want to be with you. I just want to be with you. I just want to be with you. I can see you, but I just want to be with you. Right. And it's like, cool, we're a weekend. Still, like, dealing with, like, some whining and some, like, oh, I don't want to be in here still. But it's the progress that's been made in a week when the dog could be like a year old, 2 years old, still never been in a crate. But for some reason, now people are like, I need the dog to go in a crate and be okay.
Almost right. Well, the thing that we see all the time, and then Jen, I'll get to your question in just a second. I see it a lot, and this isn't me headhunting. I'm not coming after you. I am empathetic. However, there's no magical process that dog trainers get dogs to love their crate.
Yeah.
That dog owners couldn't do.
Right. We put on some headphones.
We
try some things until something clicks. And
like, when and when the dog stops whining, we let it out.
Yeah.
But when the dog is whining, that is not the time to let the dog out.
Nope.
You have to own it.
Yeah.
You put the dog in there and it is now testing you.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to make this really unbearable.
Right. It's like a kid screaming in the grocery store for candy. It's like, I'm going to scream louder until you buy it. It's like,
but when you let the dog, out of the kennel, you are offering the candy to that kid.
Right.
When they are throwing a fit in the middle of the aisle, that is the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we just can't do that. There's no amount of force that you have to put on your dog. It's completely force-free. You're just checking out and ignoring the behavior that you don't want, and then you're rewarding the behavior you do want.
Yep.
There is no better way to do that. So now the only caveat to that, the better way to do that is to introduce it right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Before those bad habits start.
Right. Yeah.
But once the bad habit is there, the bad habit's there. You can't go differently. I mean, you can pay a professional dog trainer to do the work for you, but that is the same process. We're not like casting a spell on this dog. We're just sitting with a dog. We're sitting next to the kennel and letting the dog whine. And then when the dog stops whining, we reward.
Yeah.
That's how you undo it. All right. So Jen said, sometimes she needs a kennel for herself. But sometimes Chinoa will get in her kennel with the door open instead of her place. Nothing wrong with that. There is a concept that you create. There's a more advanced concept where you kind of control that space and then only allow the dog to go into their kennel at certain times. For Chinoa specifically, I don't see that being an issue. Yeah. So there's nothing that I would recommend with that. Yeah, I think it's totally fine.
Most of the time that comes down to like a problem when it's like a multi-dog household, because then dogs can just go into whatever kennel whenever they want. And it's like, I don't ever usually like vouch for a dog having specific things in a multi-dog like household, like toys or like whatever.
Right, that's this dog's toy.
Right, yeah, that's this dog's
that's
toy.
That's their ball.
It's my ball, right. And we all share it.
Yes.
And if we're not going to share it, we won't play 100%. With it. But when it comes to kennels, like I said, I relate a kennel back to a bedroom. And that should be their private space to go and relax. They shouldn't ever have to worry about another dog invading that space or trying to argue with them over that space. So that is one of the things that I do always like tell people is don't let dogs like swap kennels. It's if it's their kennel, it's their kennel. Put it on opposite sides of the room if you have to like differentiate. But when our dogs come out of their kennels, like we close the doors.
Yep.
For safety, because the way our kennels are set up, and two, because we don't want dogs just like randomly going into those kennels.
Yep. I was ready to jump in and then I swallowed air the wrong way. Jen also said only recently has Chinoa whimpered about going into her kennel, but she settles down and then snores. So I would say that a lot of times that can be fixed with just a little extra time or extra repetitions of going in their kennel.
Yeah, that's like a teenage dog phase right there. It's like, well, I don't want to. It's like, well, the rule's been that rule, and it's still the rule.
And then still Jen, you got a lot to say tonight. which is totally fine. I'm just razzing you. The baby scenario is a true schedule. I do that. I sit in my recliner due to my mobility. After playtime with Chinoa, she goes into her kennel for about 2 hours, then out to potty, and then playtime and interaction time.
Yeah.
That's like the triangle. So yep. Now this is me talking. So that's the triangle that we always recommend, right? Being the top of the triangle is the kennel or crate time. Then they go straight outside, they go potty, and then that way they can come inside and immediately start their interaction time. That is the highest statistical chance that they are not going to have an accident. They're not going to, have an issue with potty-based behaviors. And then at the point where when we're working on potty training, at the point where we get done with that interaction time, then they go back into their crate so that they start to expand and work the muscle that then allows them to hold it longer. Mm-hmm. And then we repeat the process. And then she said onto a 2 hour kennel time during child pickup. Yep. So that's great. If you can't watch her and you can't observe her or supervise, crate is definitely a great thing for her to go into. And then she said, Steve only goes to her kennel in order to taunt her. If you have that where one dog is like, aw, I really want to come out, and the other dog is not really respecting this space around the kennel, I would probably restrict the other dog from getting near that crate or kennel.
Yeah, because we do like rotate dogs out in and out of kennels, but it's one to work with a dog to get rid of that like FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. It's like we want a dog to be able to sit in a kennel and not whine or bark at another dog, like working through a training session outside of the kennel. And then we will put that dog that just trained in the kennel, bring the other dog out. And it's kind of teaching the rule of like taking turns, right? It's like, wait your turn. It's generally what the concept is in like a multi-dog household.
Yep. So the questions I had for that section was, what's the step-by-step method for introducing a puppy to the crate? And I talked through that with the whole one yep. paw, two paw, three paw, four. Mm-hmm. How do we troubleshoot whining or barking in the crate? You wait it out.
Yeah. It takes a long time.
There's not a magical way. There are air duster. There's a bunch of these methods.
It's really dog dependent.
Right. It's super. It's 100% dog dependent. Yeah. I'm going to give you three or four options. Some of these are popular in some dog training circles. Some of them are frowned upon.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you make your own decision. However, a couple of options. One, a can of air duster. Not at the dog, but right. just to make a loud psht sound, which can interrupt the pattern. Number two, a squirt bottle of just water. Some dogs will, that will kind of shock the system and be like, oh, I can't believe these. What was that?
Yeah.
And once again, it's not in order to spray it in the dog's face or anything like that. You can oftentimes not even hit the dog at all and just spray like at the kennel. And it's something that just breaks the dog's pattern. Mm-hmm. You can, a jar or a little, cup or something of pennies or small pebbles or rocks, something that you can jingle. There are, a whistle, with a, nothing that's like too crazy loud, not a dog whistle or anything like that, that, you know, creates a big aversion issue, but just something that is noise dependent, something that just like breaks the dog's concentration and kind of resets the dog. Other things are, vibrating remote collars, a little vibration. Some dogs find vibration incredibly aversive. That's probably not the dog that you want to use that on. Some dogs don't care about vibration at all. That's also not the dog that you want to use it on. So it's very dog dependent, but, some dogs, my Dutch Shepherd works very, very well with vibrate. It doesn't shake his head or anything, but you can tell that his little ear perks up and he's like, oh, that's my dad. That's my dad saying, stop it.
That means no.
Right. That means no. So those are a whole bunch of options that you can use to just break the pattern. But the end all be all, the most appropriate technique is ignore it.
Yeah.
And don't reward it.
Yeah. Because sometimes, like, so we go to no, right? Sometimes it's just going no and verbally correcting the dog. Sometimes that works. Sometimes negative attention is still attention.
Right. I was going to say, we had one dog that every time I would go no, they would bark more.
Yeah. Right.
And it was very quick. And so we sit here and I'm giving you all these ideas, but then you might have one of those dogs. You might have that dog that you do all these things and you're like, well, that guy's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about because none of that stuff works.
Yeah.
Right. It's possible. Right. We had another dog that none of that worked. You know what worked the best was just completely removing their ability to see anything that was going on outside of the crate.
Yeah.
Right. So just placing something like a screen in front of the crate, not, you know, blocking the crate from airflow or anything, but just angling it and placing a screen a couple feet off so that they couldn't see anything. And then we didn't talk to him. We didn't say no. We didn't say anything.
Right. So that was like with Dexter, like when we first brought him and we were like, oh, cool, let's put him in the bedroom and then let's put him like out of the bedroom and further away. Because like I said, some dogs work better when they can see you and some dogs work better when they can't.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. So that is a bunch of the troubleshooting techniques. Last one I've got written down. Thank you everyone for bearing with me. I really try to keep these just under an hour. We're going over. We're at an hour and 4 minutes. How do we teach owners to keep the crate a positive tool for the long term? Do not use it to punish the dog. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that if you're using it because the dog just pooped on the floor and you need the dog out of there, you got to step up and control your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to hide the fact that you are so pissed. Yeah. And you got to be like, come on, buddy, let's go over here and then put the dog away. Now, that's separate from however it is that you're going to react to or correct the potty training thing. That was a different episode. I gave you a whole bunch of options for that on the last episode. But what I'm getting at here is that dog chews up wall. You grab the dog by the collar and toss him into a kennel and slam the door. You messed up.
Yeah.
That is now showing the dog that when they're being punished, that's where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. And I know that it's frustrating. I know it's incredibly frustrating to come home, and I've done it. I've come home and I've been like, oh man, I messed up. Well, and by me messed up, I mean my dogs chose the wrong thing. Right? It happens, and it happens to us too. And that can be incredibly frustrating. But separate your emotions from that moment, because you are now faced with a moment to either lead your dog or to simply react. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to empower you here through my voice right now to please own your emotions. They're human emotions. And then lead your dog, guide them to what you need them to do. All right. Let's see. I'm just scanning through the air. All right. So the only thing I got left is listener projects. So we'll hit those in just a second. I'm going to open this up to questions here. I get my Jeopardy music. Let's see. Just waiting for the lawsuit from Jeopardy. All right. So if anybody's got questions, now is the time. Go ahead and unmute your mics and we'll handle.
Hey guys, it's Heath.
Hey Heath.
So my question is, how do you know, or how do you determine, I guess, what size crate is good for your dog?
So we recommend kind of the blanket statement of the dog should have enough room to turn around in the crate and have enough room to sit, and the top of their head should not, like, they shouldn't have to, like, hang their head, right? They should be able to sit up in the crate.
Gotcha. Okay.
So those are like the two major measurements. And then obviously the third measurement is like the dog should be able to lay down without having to like curl up in a tiny little ball.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been obviously doing a lot of kennel time with Luna since she's been back. And so that's just one thing we've been looking at is like, I wonder if she just needs maybe a hair bigger crate than what we have currently.
Yeah, and so that's another thing is, like, that's minimum size. But if the dog is older and doesn't have a problem with, like, pottying in the kennel, we'll give them a much larger space than we would, like, a puppy, right? So if I have no concern of her, like, using the bathroom in a kennel for several hours. But I am more apt to give the dog more room to kind of, like, walk around in the kennel and, like, kind of have their space. If they're an older dog and they have no problems with being in the kennel, but a lot of times it's no issue as long as they have the potty training down.
That's a really good point. So that recommendation was me right into dog trainer potty mode.
Yeah.
But Luna specifically, Heath is Luna's owner, and Luna is a very, very, very good and highly potty trained. So I don't think that she had in her entire program with us. I don't think she had a single accident. Mm-mm. So definitely not a potty training is a risk that that we would worry about. For my dogs, I measure from their chest to the base of their tail, and then I add about 6 to 8 inches on that. And then that's usually about where I go for length of the kennel because they'll usually, that allows them to kind of like sprawl out a little bit, but still have, be nice and cozy. If it's too big, then that can sometimes not feel as soothing as we have kind of let it to be.
Yeah. Luna slept in one of our larger travel kennels for the most part. And it was one of the, what is that brand? Creek kennels.
Rock Creek
kennels. Yep. It's a metal kennel, and it's actually for anxiety. it has like different hole positionings in the crate and everything like that. It's metal, had a pad in it. We typically give pads, softer pads to dogs in the travel kennels if they won't chew them up or ruin them and destroy them. So she always had a pad in the bottom of hers. But they do make lots of kennels for higher anxiety dogs, and it's all about like the positioning of how much they can see. But that is the one that she spent most of her time in. I'd say it was probably like 4 times maybe the size that like she would need at like a minimum. But she tends to like curl up in a little like ball or lay flat on her side. So dogs that I know like to sleep like that, I typically go for a big enough size to where they can lay on their side and, you know, stretch their legs out entirely.
Yep. All right.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem, Heath. All right. Anybody else got a question tonight?
I do have one question. Stephen Harmon of Bubba.
Hi. Hey, Steve.
Hey, hello. So my question, it doesn't stem from the crate training. I guess it's going to go into like more of your overall training and stuff. And you had just mentioned something offhand that when you have a dog that you tell him no, and he doesn't really respond to no, and he kind of gets a little bit more agitated, not agitated in a bad way, just a little bit more playful, he thinks it's a game. What is the best way of going about that? Do we introduce the bottles? Do we introduce the vibration collars at that point? Or what's the best bet?
So it depends on why they're ramping up to no. Sometimes when a dog starts to learn, and so with your dog being as young as it is, when a dog starts to learn what no means, you start to get an increase in frustration when the dog's being faced with, this is what I want, and you're telling me I can't have it. Mm-hmm. And so that excitement, right, where the dog starts to ramp up, is really based in frustration. And so there's a couple of different things that we can do. One, we can kind of control the whole situation with a leash, right off the bat, right, mm-hmm. with that drag line, and us just kind of grabbing up that drag line and being like, no, we're going to – how about down? We're going to work on down. And then we can just kind of reward that like calm energy. Anytime we can reward for calm, we want to do that. And that will help to counteract some of that. If the dog is just like, no, I'm going to initiate this game. What I recommend that you do is based on your time and if the situation is appropriate, I recommend that owners initiate their own game. Right. Rather than playing the game that the dog wants to play, you take control of the whole situation and embark on a different adventure. So that could be, hey, actually, we're going to go for a walk, or hey, actually, no, we're going to play this game over here with this object, or no, we're going to go in the backyard, or no, we're going to go. Now's some place time or crate time or whatever it is. I just recommend that you own that decision and don't meet the dog at their level when they're just responding in like a frustrated manner to you controlling.
It's 100% is very much just a frustration. Yeah, I feel that. I feel it. It is very much just I'm getting frustrated that, wait, now I can't do what I want to do.
Exactly.
So, and going back to the crate training, so what if, like, he gets the zoomies? So I tell him no, he gets the zoomies, he thinks it's a game, and then he nips a little bit, not hard, he's a little puppy. Would it be okay if I calmly took him and put him in the kennel at that point? Like,
yeah.
No, you know, no discipline or nothing like that. Should we go back to the crate training on that part? So if it's the zoomies, he's nipping, I can't really get him to play another game, or I can't really get him to settle. Should that be when I just say, okay, buddy, let's go relax?
Yes, 100% yes. As long as you introduce that in a calm manner, you won't create a bad habit. You just can't be like, you bit at me, or you nipped at me, and then you grab him and you kind of force him into a kennel. Instead, I just recommend that you just take 10 seconds interact with him just enough that you've kind of taken the control of that situation. And then you're like, you know what? I've got an idea. Let's go into our crate.
Okay. Absolutely. Thank you so much. That really alleviates a little bit.
But yeah, you can definitely use, that is the best times to use a crate for confinement, right? Is like, cool, dog's ramping up and like that's not appropriate for this situation. So we're going to institute some additional confinement so that then the dog can self-soothe and calm themselves down rather than you trying to like have to force them to. All right.
Yes, thank you so much.
No problem. All right, I'm going to close it down if we don't have anything else. Give it about 10 seconds here. All right, I think that's it. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. I really appreciate it. Thanks for being engaging and asking your questions. As we are getting back on schedule here, we had missed a couple of weeks, but we're back in the swing of things. We'll get these out pretty much every week. Wednesdays is when we do our recordings. Wednesdays at 7:45 p.m., just for everybody that's listening. This is kind of our targeted time. Anyone who's tuning in after the fact, feel free to leave us a comment, leave us a like, and leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing or what you wanna see. I think that's all I got. Brianna, yeah. You got anything?
No, that was a great one.
All right, guys. We'll sign off from here. Good night.